State Affairs to order at 3.02 p.m. Tuesday, January 23rd in the House Judiciary Room in the Alaska Capitol. Martha, will you please call the roll?
Representative Wolf?
Here.
Representative Cobb, Representative Ledoux? Representative Birch?
Hold on, brief at ease.
Do you know...
On the record.
Representative Wolf.
Present.
Representative Cobb-Alderman. Representative Ledoux.
Hello.
Representative Birch.
Here.
Representative Johnson.
Here.
Representative Tuck.
Here.
Representative Josephson, Aldernet. Representative Knopf.
Here.
Chair Christ Tompkins.
Here. And let the record reflect Representative Ledoux also just joined. And with seven members present, we have a quorum to conduct business. As a note to everyone in the room, please silence your cell phones. Thank you, Martha, and also Doug and Kelsey in the back for keeping this meeting running. We have one item on today's agenda, the first meeting of the House State Affairs Committee in 2018. This bill is House Bill 152 relating to organized militia and Alaska State Defense Force. It's sponsored by Representative Chris Tuck. It's the second hearing in this committee. Sort of assuming that through the interim, such that we had an interim, but really since we last heard this bill that memories may have faded, we'll sort of treat this as a first hearing. So today, go over the bill. We have invited testimony from Deputy Commissioner Dole, Brian Duffy, Administrative Services Division Director, and Christopher Weaver, and then have a second hearing for this bill, which is presently scheduled for Thursday. And if it's the will of the committee, potentially taking action on that day, on Thursday. So at this time, we'd like to invite Ms. Kendra Kloster and or Representative Tuck to present the legislation.
Good afternoon, members of State Affairs, Mr. Chair. And with me I have Kendra Kloster. This is Representative Chris Tuck from District 23. And with me I have Kendra Kloster, who is staff to my office. Just a quick overview again on House Bill 152. House Bill 152 would continue to modernize the military and veterans statutory authorities to ensure that the Alaska National Guard operates as a modern, efficient military force able to quickly respond to Alaska's citizens. This proposal updates the 1955 Alaska Military Code by providing statutory authorities that would bring Alaska's organized militia into the 21st century and on par with other state national guards. It does several things. It clarifies the Adjutant General's does have control and command of the organized militia. Currently, the Alaska Military Code grants the Adjutant General the authority to control the organized militia, but does not lay responsibility of command at this position. Military command authority carries two functions: the legal authority over individuals, which will provide the Adjutant General the ability to hire employees and carry out disciplinary actions, and a legal responsibility to carry out missions. This proposal will also clarify that the Adjutant General is authorized to adopt regulations that are consistent with federal active duty regulations, state law, and the governor's intent. House Bill 152 would authorize the Adjutant General to order the organized militia into state active duty under emergency situations. The current Alaska Military Code only authorizes the governor to call out the organized militia to active state service. As certain crises materialize, like we saw yesterday evening with an earthquake and then potential tsunami warnings, time and circumstances may be of the essence to save lives and property of Alaskans. If the governor somehow becomes unavailable, this bill will allow the Adjutant General to order the organized militia into active state service. The Adjutant General would be required to continue efforts to contact the governor and reassess the situation at least 72 hours after the order was given. It also extends the tuition assistance program to include Alaska State Defense Forces. The tuition assistance program allows the Adjutant General to authorize payment for the cost of tuition and fees for education, vocational, and technical training when funds are available. Currently, the tuition assistance program includes the Alaska National Guard and Alaska Naval Militia. This proposal would add the Alaska State Defense Force, which will be another tool to help the recruitment and retention of the Alaska State Defense Force. So this is just another step in making sure that we're up to code, if you will, to ensure our organized militia has authority to operate efficiently and protect Alaskans. And just a reminder, when it was in Military and Veterans Affairs, there was one amendment that was added, and that change took place on page 3, line 22, was clarified that the organized militia may not be used against or to mitigate any lawful activity.
Thank you. Any questions for the sponsor before bringing up invited testimony? Representative Birch.
I've got a thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a some testimony here from a written testimony, and one of the concerns is that the bill gives the Adjutant General sole authority without civilian oversight to call troops to state active duty without the knowledge of the governor or the governor's replacement in time of emergency or non-emergency. And I guess I'd be interested in seeing, you know, seeing if the sponsor has some sort of insight or perspective on that, in that it kind of dilutes, if you will, the relationship between the governor and the Adjutant General, because right now, it's, as I understand it, the governor's kind of clearly the responsible party overseeing that area, and I'd be interested in the sponsor's feedback on that. Thank you.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Birch, the authority still ultimately lies with the governor. Especially in an emergency situation. In an emergency situation, it's in case the governor is somehow incapacitated or can't get a hold of or isn't available to be able to give the orders. It allows the Adjutant General to take over. When it comes to non-emergency authority, you're looking at the personnel. Personnel being able to hire, fire, and retirement benefits and so on and so forth. That will fall directly underneath the Adjutant General rather than recommendations to the governor and then the governor making a decision. So those are the two major provisions that gives that Adjutant General more authority.
Representative Ledoux.
Thank you. Representative Tuck, how many other states have provisions such as this which allow the Adjutant General to gives her such freedom to call up active troops?
Yeah, as we have people from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, I'll allow them to answer questions. They'll probably have more information than I do on that. And so if I may, Mr. Chair, I'm going to go ahead and resume my seat back up here to answer questions to make room for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Although maybe a few more questions for the sponsor while you're there, or for Ms. Kloster and Representative Wohl and Representative Johnson. I see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if you know the answer. Well, here's my question, Representative Tuck. Where does the lieutenant governor fit in? In other words, let's say the governor's incapacitated, having surgery or a medical issue or something like that. Does the lieutenant governor then assume his duties, and then would he be the party that could call up the National Guard?
And I'll probably have to punt on that one too, but my understanding is if there's something happens with the governor, the lieutenant governor is automatically in command, and then the Adjutant General will fall under their authority. And remember that in the bill that he has there's 72 hours that the Adjutant General has to recheck, continue trying to get a hold of the governor. And if the governor is not available and then the lieutenant governor becomes a governor, then the Adjutant General answers to the lieutenant governor.
Kendra Kloster, staff to represent Tuck. I just wanted to give an example that might help with the authority here. So if we have something like a Good Friday earthquake, and let's hope this never happens, but the governor is injured or you can't find him, he's under a pile of rubble, hopefully not. But if that case were to happen, in order to call in our active duty right now, you'd have to swear in a new governor before you could get the guard to be active. So in that kind of situation, what this bill would do is say, the Adjutant General can actually call them in into play in that circumstance. So it's limited. So in addition, we have, if you see on page 3, they have to do a number of things. They have to also continue to reach out to the governor, trying to find him, or heard. They have to reassess in 72 hours on the situation, so if the governor can either pull the troops back or have them keep going. But that's kind of the situations that we're looking in, is we don't want to lose any time if that were to happen. If you had an earthquake, you have Alaskans that you need to save, the adjutant general can step right in instead of waiting to swear in a new governor in order to get our service members out to help individuals. So that's the circumstances in which this bill is addressing.
Thank you.
Follow-up?
Thank you. I guess my only question is, if the governor's incapacitated, well, I guess in the scenario you mentioned, you might not know. So then the lieutenant governor, I guess the process, he would have, if there was a situation where he was to take over the powers of the governor, there's a swearing in. It's not automatic, right?
Representative Wolf, through the chair, I do believe that is correct, and yep, so I'm getting a head nod that yes, you would have to swear in, because right now the governor is the only one that can call in, except for right now, a wildfire, actually the adjutant general can actually call individuals in, but this is expanding it to include earthquake, flooding, and other natural disasters to save lives, prevent human suffering, so that's all in the bill, so it's just expanding it right now, but yes, you would have to swear in a new governor in order to call up the guard.
Thank you.
And Representative Johnson, I've got you next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that I have grave concerns about this bill. I look at this and it feels like it just goes against the entire, my sense of the chain of commands. And I do know that we could, if there's a gap in Alaska's emergency management, maybe it would be easier to amend something with the emergency powers or emergency powers with the lieutenant governor or something to keep that in the realm of an elected official that actually is in command of the National Guard. I mean, there's a lot of things that jump out here at me, but I believe that it goes against our, well, I don't have to say this is Larry Wood that did the written testimony. I'm going to claim him right now as my constituent, and he has a lot of good things in this letter, but particularly he calls out the fact that he believes it conflicts with the federal precedent and law, and he cites a statute. That's the second to the last paragraph in his written testimony. And so I guess I'd just like to ask you what your thoughts on that comment, that it conflicts with the established federal precedent and law. And the Constitution, I think, is what he's calling out.
There's times when the President, through the chair, Representative Johnson, there are times when the President of the United States calls our militia into action, our National Guard into action, but there's also times where the governor can do that. And so this will not conflict with the president's ability to be able to do that. This is when we have natural disasters, wildfires, catastrophes, so on and so forth, that and that's already actually written in statute. We had to do some clarifications in the bill, and you'll see that it was old language that we had in there. But then when there's other types of actions as required from the adjutant general, then they would be able to do that if the governor isn't available. So it doesn't, on that, let me just make sure I'm reading Mr. Wood's second to last paragraph correctly, but I think he's referring to established federal president. As the recent reduction in force of the Army National Guard has demonstrated, the National Guard is a thing of the federal government. Yes and no. There are times when the state actually calls in the National Guard.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. And I'm going to go to the last member of the committee who has yet to ask a question, also in the queue, Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have multiple questions, but I'll kind of space them out. So, first question through the chair is, we talk about expanding the tuition assistance program to include the State Defense Force. So, two questions in here. Can you give me a brief summary of what the State Defense Force comprises, member-wise, how active, number one, and number two, since the fiscal note doesn't reflect any change, I'm just kind of wondering how you're going to continue to provide the same team with the same dollars, or what is the plan there?
And we do have people from the Department of Military Affairs and Affairs that can talk about the duties and roles of each one of those divisions. And for the primary purpose of this, though, is that we have people that are under training if they're injured or hurt under the training, it costs the state a lot of money if we were to, if they weren't on benefits for legal lawsuits and so on and so forth. This puts the money into the insurance program as well.
Follow-up? Did we not address that last year? I thought we passed legislation last year that addressed that specific issue under a different bill.
Yeah, and we did for that, but let me take a look. Let me look at this clause real quick, because I think it does say benefits in there. Section 5 there, the members of the Alaska State Defense Force performing inactive duty or training or community service duties shall receive benefits under this if the member suffers an injury, disability, or death while in the line of duty. So I think we've addressed it in more ways than one, but this is pretty much lining everything up with one another.
So I kind of make a comment and real quick, Mr. Chairman, and I'll be done. So I share the concerns of Representative Johnson, and I'm really interested in the answer to Representative Ledoux's question about what other states go down this road, because it appears like we're giving up all oversight is what the legislation appears. So when I go to the letter addressed to you, Representative Tuck, from the department, when it talks in the first page, it says that general commands and controls the organized militia under the direction of the governor as commander-in-chief who maintains civilian oversight. You know, I just like that phrase. And when I read the bill, it just appears that we're giving up the right for any oversight, especially in the realm of adopting regulations and other things. So that's a concern. So if you have any response, it's not a direct question in there, but appreciate it. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Knopf, we passed the Alaska Military Code of Justice reform 2 years ago, where we allow them to do regulations. A lot of this stuff, when we passed that bill, is this bill here. We had a series of four bills. This is the fourth one. Actually, we're going to have a fifth one possibly coming here soon, is to make sure our entire Title 26 lines up with one another. So we're using this bill, if you will, to clean up some of the language of stuff, but we already gave a lot of that regulation authority to the ACMJ, or for them to be able to adopt regulations for that, and this is clarifying some of that.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
So I'm not sure who to ask this question to. So there is no procedure in which the lieutenant governor takes temporary control without actually being sworn in? Because I guess I'm thinking back to the governor's operation about a year or so ago. And presumably he was under general anesthetic. So I guess I'm surprised that there isn't just some sort of procedure for temporary control for the lieutenant governor without a swearing-in ceremony. Who can address that for me?
And maybe this is a great opportunity to bring our invested testifiers up. Looks like Deputy Commissioner Dole is ambling to the front of the room. Please go ahead and put yourself on the record, Deputy Commissioner, and present any opening comments, and also if you might please address Representative Ledoux's question.
I had two questions, actually. One before two.
Questions, plural. Let us stand corrected.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole of the State of Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. I'm hopeful that we have Lieutenant Colonel Chris Weaver, our staff judge advocate, on the line as needed. My opening comments are easy. We strongly support this bill. I thought it would be most productive to try to address the concerns that were raised by the committee rather than just going into a formal discussion of the bill analysis. First, Representative Birch asked about the calling the state active duty without the governor's knowledge. This is limited by Section 3 to specific emergencies where a delay in getting the knowledge of the governor could lead to loss of life. After a disaster, there's a response time. There's no law enforcement here. It's only to save Alaskans that these provisions are used. Last night, about 12:35, just General Hummel ended up calling Governor Walker. She reached him at that point because he was on the ground between flights in Seattle. Had he still been on the flight, just having left Washington, D.C., there would have been a period of hours before he could have been reached. During that time, when he could not have been reached, we could not have deployed the National Guard had the tsunami actually been problematic rather than a small wave to go out and rescue folks. During that time, we would not have been able to use their life-saving abilities, or in the case of an earthquake, those of the fire department, the other things. The objective here is to take advantage of that golden hour, that golden response time when we can do the most good to save Alaskans and not be held up by the not being able to reach there. You're right, there's an important check and balance that has to be there before we deploy military force. And this may go to some of the other concerns of oversight expressed by this group. The adjutant general is an at-will employee of the governor. For any reason, if there's a loss of trust and confidence, the governor can relieve the individual immediately. No procedure, no notice, none of the regular employment law things of a probation plan, just the individual is gone. So in terms of ultimate accountability to the person with whom the buck stops, the governor has it. Once those troops are deployed, he is, in selecting an adjutant general, as she has in the future, has determined that this is the person representing his interest. And just like we're all responsible for the actions of our subordinates, the governor is too in that point. So if they make a bad call, he retains responsibility to the Alaskan people for that decision. But the long and short of it is that we would only do one of those emergency responses without the governor's knowledge if to save lives. Representative Ledoux, you asked how many other states allow this level of authority with an adjutant general. We're not aware of any other state that doesn't. So we have been under other states allow for provisions for in an emergency such as this for to deploy the adjutant general to direct the deployment. So unless Colonel Weaver chimes up after me, I'm not aware of one where an adjutant general can't do this on behalf of the governor. For all they're acting as his command tool to actually implement things there, and time can be of the essence. Representative Wool, you asked about the lieutenant governor's role when assumes. Normally there's a formal assumption, and the case of a governor going under for anesthesia where there's a known temporary unavailability, there's a procedure in place if you plan it ahead of time for a temporary delegation to go in place there. The challenge we have in Alaska is we can't program our tsunamis and earthquakes ahead of time to know, oh, the governor will be on a flight or he'll be in a rubble pile at that particular point, which is what drives it.
I want to make sure you have the opportunity to finish addressing any other questions, Deputy Commissioner Dole.
Turning to Representative Johnson's questions about the emergency powers, an elected official always retains responsibility for what their subordinates do. In that regard, if we look at the duty forces in Alaska, an installation commander has the authority, without contacting the president or any elected official, to send their military forces off the base to help Alaskans in need for up to 72 hours without contacting up the chain of command in that situation. So if we look at federal precedent and federal law from that perspective, it isn't just one level down that can be immediately just overseen by the president. Going from, say, the president down to the Air Base Wing Commander of JBEAR, there's, without doing math in public, probably 8 to 10 levels down that authority is delegated, the concern being to save lives in that point. We know ultimately the officer will be held accountable afterwards if they make a bad call. As to the Alaska Army National Guard, it is under the command and control of the governor, not the federal government, unless it is specifically mobilized under Title 10 United States Code authorities. Mr. Wood is wrong in that regard. The governor, whoever that person may be, is the commander-in-chief unless mobilized, usually to go overseas and do things. Representative Knopp, you asked important questions in these fiscal times about how it was going to work with tuition assistance. We've grown from about 70 active ASDFers to about 120 active ASDFers in the last couple of years. During that time, the average age has dropped 20 years. The percentage who are vets has increased by 50% in that group. In terms of how we're going to do this, the tuition assistance program now is a certain amount that is allocated to University of Alaska, no more. Even if additional vets sign up, or I'm sorry, additional guard members sign up, it's capped at a certain amount. And we have about 88% execution generally on that fund. This, the intent here would be to allow for applications of ASDF soldiers as certified by the Adjutant General to sign up or compete for those funds with the Alaska National Guard folks. There would be no growth. Just like now, if we run out of funds, we run out of funds and some don't get it. Or otherwise, there's an under-execution in that regard. And particularly with the younger interest in the Alaska State Defense Force, we think this is a useful recruitment and retention tool. The I wanted to emphasize again with your concerns about oversight given up, the governor always retains the authority to overrule any, they call it regulation, it's really, to me, a personnel policy predominantly internal to the organization, or any order given by the Adjutant General can be overruled. And the Adjutant General shown the door if it's a particularly egregious example. It's ultimate oversight. And I believe I addressed no procedure for temporary control, so if there's anyone's question I missed, I apologize, but I wanted to try to address those quickly.
I believe there are more questions. Representative Ledoux.
Okay. So you say there's no procedure for temporary control because you got to do the temporary control in advance. So why couldn't the governor just write a general letter? Lieutenant Governor, if I'm, you know, under anesthetic, under a pile of rubble, under, dead or something, you have my permission to take temporary control of the government.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, we will address, this is outside of Title 26, how the succession and what the requirements are for succession. I believe it's spelled out by statute. It isn't just a letter that can be done, and just how it would work in the procedures. And even then, if we look at recent disasters such as Puerto Rico, where comms were, communications were scrubbed off the entire island, even if you may very well have both of them not available, at least to South Central Alaska, if that's where a disaster hits. At that point, do we want to curtail the Adjutant General from being able to launch the fire department or the search and rescue forces or even folks to help with general relief?
Just follow up?
Follow up.
So in Puerto Rico, I take it, they had a statute similar to this so that the – do they have a National Guard that got involved in things too?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the Puerto Rico National Guard was involved. A nice thing about southeast disasters, hurricanes, is you see them coming ahead of time, so you can put the Guard in state active duty or active duty ahead of time. They have much more planning in their disasters than we have the option of up here.
Thank you.
Representative Wolf?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to clarify, this is only for emergency, natural disaster, humanitarian-type missions, correct?
So the Chair, Representative Wolf, that's correct. I believe the exact terms are spelled out in Section 3 of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you mentioned when this last, yesterday, I guess, when the tsunami warning came about, the governor was on a plane, or actually wasn't on a plane, but could easily have been on a plane, and you said it's that golden hour. Do you think 72 hours is too many for, I mean, I understand there may be times when the governor's otherwise predisposed, either flying or, you know, on a rocket ship or something like that, but it seems like 3 days, and I know there's a provision for constantly trying or regularly trying to reach, but I mean 3 days of not being able to reach a governor seems pretty long.
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, I'd note the 72 hours mirrors the federal requirements of how long a base commander can provide forces and immediate response authority. Excepting in a widespread mass disaster, it may take time to reach competent authority, or with a massively compromised communication system, the governor may be fine, the troops may be fine, but establishing the communications link from one to the other may take time. I refer to the wisdom that went into the federal guidelines for what is pretty much an accepted standard.
Okay, thank you.
I've got a question following up on Representative Knopf's question about tuition assistance, and I want to, I guess, clarify my understanding. So every year there's a pot of funds available for tuition assistance. What I think I understood from your comments is that right now that pot is not fully expended, and that pot is finite, so if more people are participating in that tuition assistance, there's no way that it's going to go over the allotted funds. It's just greater utilization of available funds. Is that understanding correct?
Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner Dole, that is correct. There have been years in the past where it has been fully expended, but in any event, it's like your checking account. Once you hit your balance, there's no more.
And as a follow-up, if I may ask, how many funds are in that pot of tuition assistance? How much money?
Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner Dole, I would have to, it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. I would have to check the exact amount for this year.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Representative Knopf.
Not a question. I just want to thank you, Mr. Dole, for the clear and precise answers and no ambiguity in there, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
To the chair, thank you, Representative Knopf.
Any other questions? Going once, going twice. Representative Wohl.
Mr. Chair. So I guess my earlier question, you said it's in the section. So in the event of war, invasion, or riot, so those certainly aren't natural disasters, correct?
Through the chair, in the revised statute,
I guess that's in the for the governor. Maybe I should go over this more closely instead of I'm looking at page 2, but
to the chair, Representative Wohl, in the case of, to me, a riot is a law enforcement situation. In that case, the governor has the legal authority to order the National Guard into state active duty to maintain law and order. However, that being a law enforcement function, the adjutant general does not. That's one of those, if a decision is made to utilize the National Guard in a role against other Alaskans, the governor would retain that authority.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Tuck.
Not the question, but just a final statement.
Yeah.
One of many bills that we're trying to, again, update Section Title 26. As stated earlier, our Military Code of Justice was written in 1955. There hasn't been any really significant changes until 2 years ago. And that's a 60 to 63-year period of no changes. So other states have already adopted a lot of provisions that we have in here. We're also looking at the opportunity of arranging Title 26 so that it makes sense, because things are kind of piecemealed along the way. And so you'll see some stuff that's actually been moved. And I'll just give you an example. When it comes to regulation authority, being able to write regulations, that was already given, but we're just moving it because we're putting it in a more appropriate spot. And then we're given that hire and fire authority, again, to the Adjutant General underneath her own department. And basically, some of the stuff, we're just bringing it up to date to include all of the different divisions of the Military and Veterans Affairs. So that's basically what the bill does. And I guess the one major piece is in the cases of emergency disaster, the roles and authority. And I think Section 2 pretty much spells out the governor's role. And then Section 3, of course, the Adjutant General's role and under what conditions, and you see that's pretty well spelled out. And then we took the opportunity to, not just in wildland fire, but any other type of natural catastrophe.
Great. Thank you, Representative Tuck. And maybe as a closing request, I would appreciate confirmation if, in fact, Alaska is the last state in the union to adopt language similar to this. I know you're just working from sort of offhand knowledge, but if you're able to confirm that, I know I'd appreciate that. And that concludes today's hearing on HB 152. We will hear it again on Thursday. If it's the will of the committee, we will move the bill at that time. I'm going to set an amendment deadline for this legislation to have amendments submitted to my office by 10 a.m. Thursday, January 25th. So that's the day of 10 a.m. Amendments submitted, not requested of legal at that time, but submitted to our office. That's an imposition. Let me know. We can figure something out. And thank you to Martha, Doug, Kelsey. And at 3:38 p.m., we are adjourned.